This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Today on the program, we are going to talk about Jim Matheson joining a D.C. lobbying firm.
And the president giving the best State of the Union ever, except for that creepy guy with a tan in the back.
And I'm Team Whittingham, Jim's Team Chris Hill. The battle when we come back.
But first, this news. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and just bear with me as I have to deal with Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Yeah!
And Greg Hughes on the right.
I have to deal with him on the left, too. Good morning, Natalie.
In the second segment, we are going to talk about the State of the Union address. We're saving it, but let's start out with a little bit more local color, and let's talk about the University of Utah. Two things I want to cover. Whittingham's contract, and should BYU and Utah be playing football every year? Greg.
There's a common denominator in those two topics, and that is that athletic director Chris Hill. He took one of the longest, most storied, traditional rivalries in this country, the University of Utah and BYU, and because he wanted some, you know, home and home with Michigan, blew it up. This thing survived world wars. This thing survived everyone but him. And what's happened? I think that they're all coming to realize I think the polls show 110% of people think that they should be playing each other traditionally. And then the other issue is, you know, he let every assistant coach for Whittingham go to other programs because he doesn't want to pay them. And so Whittingham decides he's upset about it. The only part I'm disappointed with is he gave him a raise. He's going to keep him. I would have loved to have seen Whittingham kick that university to the curb like I did long ago, Jim, and get out of there.
Jim, I think we've got a BYU fan in the studio. I mean,
rise and shout.
I'm a U fan, and I haven't really missed playing BYU at all. We got bigger fish to fry.
No, I can't say that. I went to BYU, so I'm
that's
inept.
Right.
I'm just
you are
disqualifying you are. Myself completely, except I just want to say – one of the giant pillars. If we had a Mount Rushmore in Utah, Chris Hill's head would be up there. This is a guy who came and who has changed Utah sports, and I mean the Utah with the big red U, forever. He has as much integrity as any person I've ever met. Talk about anybody you want. Talk trash talk, Hughes. Not Chris Hill.
You think Whittingham, Jim, deserved this larger contract? How do you feel about it?
What I don't like is he's part of this whole coachy thing. You know, we had a pretty good football coach here who just won the national championship. And they get prosperous and they get happy and they win and they build a good program. And then what do? They've got long-term contracts, and instead they start saying, no, I want another $5 million a year. They create some controversy, and they go back to the table, and they get people worked up. I don't think that's what you do if you're a classy guy.
Look, these universities aren't charitable organizations. They're doing it because it brings greater revenue to those institutions. I'm telling you, it's a smart play. Your team, Chris Hill, I'm team Whittingham. I think the guy should have kicked Utah to the curb. He's better than that. He doesn't need the Utes anymore. Do what Urban Meyer did. Get out of Salt Lake City. Urban Meyer did it. Whittingham can do it. He didn't need a contract extension.
$2.6 million a year. He just got a $100,000 contract. And listen to this. This is Kyle Whittingham. My assistant coach, you drove him away. Why? Because you wouldn't pay an assistant coach $800,000 a year on a three-year guarantee?
It's the going rate or more.
Hey, listen, I did a campus visit to USC, you know, another Pac-12 team or, you know, college. You guys know that it stands for the University of Spoiled Children.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've actually heard that.
It's a prestigious place.
That isn't the accurate acronym.
It's a prestigious place. But I remember the dean of the business school looking at us, and he basically said, you know, the only sport that matters is college football, and it pays immense dividends. He said, you can let go of the rest, but do good at football.
Spoke to a guy that went to Nebraska to look at their law school, and they took him to the stadium, the football stadium, to consider going to law school in Nebraska.
Crazy. Well, another report this week. We got a report from the Utah Foundation, a local think tank, that Utah's tax burden is now at a 20-year low. I know a bit about this because I work in public finance, but, you know, we have a state that has lowered its sales tax, that has taken most of it off of food, that has lowered its income tax rate, And in the end, state coffers are taking in somewhere between $400 and $500 million less a year. I think that's great news, Greg.
I thought you were going to say that. You surprised me. I was ready
that's
to
what
just.
What the middle does.
Well, I'll tell you what. People have digested that report as a negative. I was going to say the same thing. Well, I think that for this economy to thrive, you better have some good household income to put dinner on the table, to spend the things that you need to do. This is how the economy works. And I'll tell you this. Let's do a poll in Utah and ask the public, the middle class, the people that put the food on the table. Do you feel underburdened? Do you feel mm-hmm. that you are just getting a free ride by way of the taxes that you pay? I would guess that people feel that they're putting their share in, and it's up to politicians to just be smarter with those funds, yeah. not say they need to pay us more.
Just so you know where I'm coming from, I like the cuts. I just think the legislature should have been more responsible with the motor fuel tax. Jim, I know you're going to feel differently than the two of us.
We are at a 20-year low, $500 million a year, $479 million a year less than we should be taking in. What we've done is robbed every classroom, every neighborhood classroom in our state. We've robbed those children of an opportunity for an education so we can have an extra $200 in our pocket, and that's going to make the whole economy tingle all across. Well, it may feel good while we're spending that extra $200 now, but in 10, 20, 30 years, when Utah's children can't compete nationally and internationally, we are going to look back at these days as creating a tremendous catastrophe because we continue, no matter what our blah blah is, we're not funding education. And this is one of the ways we're cheating the whole generation of young Utahns.
Please, Greg.
Here's the thing. For those that just heard what Jim shared and believe it's true, I want you to go to a Democrat-controlled state where what Jim said they implement to the word. Go to California, go to any state you want where they think burdens are too low, we need to raise taxes so that we can get more money for our state government to operate. I will show you that by comparison with the state of Utah, Utah enjoys a healthier economy, greater surplus. We have larger surpluses arriving. I absolutely reject the notion that if we'd have just taxed more, you would have $500 million more arriving in the coffers yeah. because politicians decided that that's how much the state of Utah deserved. Look at the states that think that way and show me what their budgets look like right now. They do not have the surpluses by percentage that we see here in the state of Utah.
Jim, can you give any credence to the notion that because of our lower tax burden, our economy is stronger?
No.
That's right.
Zero. Look at Massachusetts. That's the one we'll talk about some other time.
All right. Well, today, all the political fireworks aside, this is a somber day when we're honoring our former Speaker of the House, Becky Lockhart. She's been called the Iron Lady. Jim, Greg, you want to say something, just some parting thoughts?
I'll just be brief. So from a House point of view, there is nothing lower than a minority party senator who's a freshman. I mean, it mm-hmm. just doesn't get much lower than that. Twice I needed to talk to her. The Speaker opened her office. She closed the doors. She put her feet up and said, how can I – what do you need, Senator? Explain it to me. I mean, she did everything I said. But that's all you can ask from a leader, and this state will miss this woman.
It is a very somber and sad time in the House, Natalie. This isn't a former speaker from a few years ago. We're talking we're in that gray area where mm-hmm. Becky's term ended just at the end of this year, mm-hmm. and I'm the speaker-elect. And so right now, this is in real time that we have lost our speaker. And it had always been planned that she would put the gavel down and start the session this coming Monday, that she was going to be the one to swear me in into that role. I have served on her leadership team for the last 4 years. Most of the House members that I serve with have only known Speaker Lockhart as their speaker. We have a large majority of House members who've served 4 years or less. And so this is a unexpected 46 years of age. We thought we had Becky for a lot longer than that, and we're looking forward to her institutional memory and her leadership. And it's sad. It's very sad.
Yeah. Well, God bless the Lockhart family. In our next segment, we'll talk about some more political news.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Greg Hughes on the right.
And I am Natalie Gochner in the political center, something that our producer has called the common sense middle, I noticed. So I'm proudly represented. We got news this week that our former congressman, Jim Matheson, has joined a D.C. lobbying firm. I was almost going to bring that up as my gripe and tell how I feel about this. I just don't really like this. Like, I'm thinking there are so many better ways for this guy to spend his talent. Jim,
I wish you
defend the man. What do you think?
I wish he wouldn't do it. The law says he can't take money for lobbying for a year or 2 years. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. But then they go join a lobbying firm to run people's schedules or something.
They get their hooks in them, yeah.
You know, give me a break. I don't like it.
Well, does this mean he's not going to run for the U.S. Senate or for governor? Because once you become part of that lobbying class, I don't know that the public servant side, you can just jump right back into it. I think it changes the way you approach public policy. You are a hired gun. You are doing this for a living, which is legitimate. And politics and public policy is an information game. But once you enter into that world, mm-hmm. tell me how you get to the public service side again. Let me just counter that.
Let's look at this. Where did Mike Lee come from? Registered lobbyist. Where
and you love him? You think he's – is he your bellwether? That's a bellwether for
where
you?
Where did Mr. Stewart come from? Lobbyist. I mean, that there seems to be a ton of
I remember
pipeline.
Distinctly when Mike Leavitt transitioned away from being Secretary of Health and Human Services. He had a longer window where he couldn't lobby, and he made it a point to not do that. And his firm does consulting services, but he personally did not do lobbying work, and that just – you can do it. The thing that I wanted to bring up, though, Greg, I was at the Legislative Policy Summit, the Zions Bank Summit. I know you were there for part of it, but I was there for the whole day, and Jim Matheson presented, and he sounded like a candidate. I mean, little notes were being passed around, like, this guy sounds like he's positioning himself. So I just think, if I had to guess, this is a financial thing. He's just making some money in the window.
I think for a Democrat to win statewide office in Utah, it's a high hill to climb. And joining a D.C. inside the Beltway lobbying firm is not – I would not put that in the formula for success.
What if it actually comes down to something like he needs to feed his family and pay tuition?
Except his wife is a doctor. I think, he's going to be okay.
I mean, you lived on being a a congressman isn't high on the hog. I mean, we got Chaffetz on a cot still after all these years.
I think in speeches he could make $30,000-$40,000 a year.
I'm telling
that's
you,
that's the average wage. I know that's not any money, but
no. I mean, you think Jim Matheson can make $30,000 a year in speeches?
He'd have to do a lot.
Oh, okay,
hey, Jim would pay $30,000 just to hear him once. I mean, that's one
how
speech.
How much do you get paid, Jim?
It would take me 30,000 speeches to make $30,000 from speeches.
I would have to decline 30,000 speeches to get $30,000. I think that's what I'd have to happen for me.
Well, look at what Sarah Palin does.
Oh, my goodness. You want to go there? I don't.
Hey, listen.
Let's just do that. Let's on this show, let's always compare Jim Matheson to Sarah Palin. Can we just do that? Can that be our new standard? We just make it the same.
Can I just throw Mike Lee into it?
Just synonymous. We'll just make all of them the same now.
Speaking of Mike Lee, I mean, there was news this week from John Huntsman Jr. I mean, he called him brilliant.
I loved it.
I mean, what is this in the Huntsman family? Who's closest to the Huntsman family? Jim? Greg?
It's not me, but I mean,
I remember there was a split between dad and son about the presidential nominee too.
Yeah, that's
true. I mean, they don't always agree on a lot of things.
Or do you think it's
I don't think so.
I don't think so. You know, I'll tell you this: I love that family. What the work that they're doing and what John Huntsman Sr. is doing on the front of fighting cancer. We are so lucky to have a crusader like we have in John Huntsman, who's leveraged his success in the business world to really improving the human condition. I think he's frustrated, and I think he has his reason. What I regretted from John Huntsman Sr.'s comments, and what I appreciate about John Huntsman Jr.'s comments, is look, if you're Republicans or you have a problem with the U.S. senator, I hate public fights. Okay, I feel like I would much rather have family fight. If Jim and myself are going to have a true, different than banter over policy, but a true argument or a difference of opinion, I want that to be between us. Okay, I don't need to be on the rooftop screaming it. I did not like seeing Our U.S. senator publicly disparaged that way. I thought it was
in Politico.
Yeah, I just didn't. Yeah. I just thought it just made me cringe.
Oh, give me a break.
Hey, I want us to stay unified against you Democrats.
How much did our whole state budget? Because I asked 99% of the people in the state this, and they don't know the answer. Hughes is going to know, but our state budget is
$14 billion.
This guy wandered back to the Senate together with Ted Cruz, and they decided, just for the fun of
get out the violin, Greg.
Well, it's worth repeating.
Is this a best of show? Haven't we heard this one already?
$22 billion. You don't easily forget that. He cost the country $22 billion with his whining. So,
If you think $22 billion stings, the guy was trying to keep us from deficit spending even deeper than that. That was kind of the point.
I agree with Huntsman Sr. and the man fighting cancer.
Oh, I love it. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I am joined by Jim DeBacchus and Greg Hughes. So now's when the real fun starts. Everybody buckle up. You guys try not to attack each other. But we want to talk about President Obama's State of the Union address. Typically, we like to stay on more local topics, but this is why we got Greg to show up
inspiring.
Today.
Inspiring.
Inspiring. If by inspiring you mean stomach pump. No, sorry. That's a little much.
You're talking about Boehner, right?
No,
in the background there? That's
what
the stomach pumping.
Let me tell you something.
Why do they sit him back there? I mean, it's just an annoyance.
The vice president was making gestures and smiling. There's actually some internet. There's some viral shots of the vice president acting like a clown back there. It was so funny. Here's the thing. You know, I am just to the point now when we talk about policy that I am tired of the old playbooks. Okay, and Republicans too. Mm-hmm. I am tired of us just repeating the same stuff over and over and over again. I'm going to tell you, if you want to get up as president of the United States and say, I want to give away a ton of free stuff and entitlements, and I want to stick it to the rich. But as Americans, not as Republicans and Democrats, let's get along and let's come together. Then say something different that isn't the same old class warfare. That is a campaign speech that is meant to energize the base, raise money for your Democrat candidates. That is not a serious policy discussion when you're staring at a Congress that has a majority of Republicans in the House and Senate. That is not a speech that shows any indication that he wants to truly get things done for the American people.
Jim, I know you liked this speech.
I loved the speech. I was so proud of President Obama. I mean, I got goosebumps. You know, what the Republicans are failing to look at, four quick numbers. Numbers aren't good on radio. Dow Jones, I'm going to give you a before and after. 8,000, 18,000. Unemployment, 7.8%, 5.8%. GDP growth, -5.4%. Now 3.5 to the plus. The deficit of the GDP, it was 9.8% when he took office. Now it's 2.8%. Consumer confidence, 37%, now 94%, and Republicans refuse to deal with the facts. They're talking about Benghazi or flapping their wings. You know what? That's a president who has done a pretty darn good job with the economy. And if you're going to say, oh, what a great job our Republicans have done with Utah, look at all our great numbers, fine. Use the same standard and say the leader of the free world has done a heck of a job with our economy.
All right, so what do I say from the political middle? I mean, I didn't hate the speech. I didn't like the speech, you know?
Well, and that's in the middle.
I know. And maybe
good
you
job.
Guys just hate
you
that.
Just nailed it.
But let me make a couple of quick points. I mean, just think of this. You know, what the president essentially said is, if you give me something that takes away what I just did on immigration, I'll veto it. You know, it's just this. And I'm like, why isn't he saying, you know, come on, come meet with me. Let's talk about how we keep families together. Let's talk about how we deal with the dreamers.
Well,
you know, those are two immigration points that you can find common ground on. So, instead, he pulls out the V word. One more. He says, I want to, you know, stick it to the rich with some higher tax rates. I'm like, that is not good for the economy. Close loopholes. That's good for the economy. And, Jim, there's all this common ground that he could play to. So, you know, don't call me the squishy middle. Call me the productive middle. This is where we get things done.
Can I say there was a nuance? There was a nuance in that speech that I found remarkable. He, in his attempt to share an interest in bipartisanship, he said to the Republicans, I'm not asking you to abandon everything you believe in, but if you've heard things that I have shared that resonate with you, come to me and I will listen. That is not bipartisanship as I understand it. Bipartisanship as I understand it is both sides. So you have a Republican mm-hmm. Congress. You have a Democrat president. The president was inviting Republicans to hear what he had to say, and if any of what he wants to do resonates, come talk to him about it. I think it's deeper than that when you really want to get something done. Mm-hmm. It's what is it that the Republicans are looking at as critical issues, and what do you, Mr. President, look at as critical issues, and where does the overlap occur? That was not what he was inviting the U.S. Congress to do in his version of bipartisanship, and it just signals to me more of the same.
What do you guys make of John Boehner back there when the president makes the point that, you know, women should have equal pay for equal work? Biden stands up and everyone, you know, gives a standing ovation, and Boehner just sits there. I mean, how's a woman supposed to feel, Greg? He said, like, equal pay for equal work. I mean, just and what I don't like is the president politicized that, but I'm sort of like, why is that how we set up these pageantry kind of moments? Why do we have those people sitting behind him, first of all?
Yeah.
And then why don't you just have a house rule that you can't stand up? Why do we sit here and show all this division?
Yeah, you know, I like your point, because it's
like
a setup. It's a setup, because the reason the Speaker of the House didn't stand up is because they know the route or the policy attached to that comment. The American people don't.
Yeah,
It's an intuitive comment. It's something that we all believe in. Equal pay for equal effort, equal work. Nobody argues with that. But what the Speaker knows is that what that's code for, or what they've proposed in policy, they
might
don't.
Be quotas,
they have a genuine disagreement on that. So he doesn't stand, but it makes him look like he hates women.
Jim?
Interestingly, it wasn't just Boehner that didn't stand up. You know who they focused in, at least where I was watching the speech? Mia Love. Said equal pay for women in the United States of America. And there's a shot of Mia Love just sitting there with her arms at her side, kind of looking bored. Hello.
It's
you know,
a setup.
Why can't everything is a setup. That's why we can't get anything done. The very thing you're saying is everything that Obama proposes as a middle ground is a setup. So you have to be able to sit down. I mean, let's go back to Obamacare. Everybody that has a brain in their head realizes that it's a terrible thing to have millions of people in our country with no health care. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. There ought to have been common ground to sit down and deal with the people that don't have health care. And for a year and a half, the president begged, cajoled, thought things were going on in committee, worked with the Congress. But you know what? It was pre-baked. There was not one Republican that was going to agree. If Obama had come out with a cure for cancer, they would have voted against it. I mean, that was not going to happen. And so now he's thinking, it doesn't matter what I say. These guys have made it clear, the way Speaker Boehner did the day after his inauguration, we're not going to let this guy have one victory.
I just have to say that if Jeb Bush were giving that speech, I think there would be more of a play to the middle, and that's what I'm hoping for in the future. And if Mitt Romney can play that role, he'd have my support. Okay, we need to go to gripes. Guys, what do you want to do for your gripes this week?
Okay, I'm going to give a gripe. I say it like that's breaking news, right? I got a lot of them.
You put a lot of thought into this one because, you know, they're hard to come by.
They are. Yeah, I just can't think. No, I'm going to tell you this. I just finished a panel. The White House is in Salt Lake City this week, and they are looking at this proposal called Pay for Success. And I ran a bill this last session about preschool, quality preschool. And there's this new public policy effort going on, and the White House wants to learn more about it. Also, it's bipartisan because Senator Hatch's office has also looked at this, and what it is.
And the University of Utah has been tapped as the Harvard of the West. Keep
absolutely,
going.
Absolutely, as a Harvard of the West. And so there's this great interest in, can we avoid state or government costs by going upstream and having those who would reduce recidivism in our prisons, or improve or bring a child to grade level when they enter our public schools, so they're not spending on special education dollars. There's this there's a real effort and a push to see a bipartisan look at this. Here's my gripe. Ben McAdams, our Democrat Salt Lake County mayor, you would think doesn't even have to touch the ground to walk into the room of a meeting like this. It is all, Mayor McAdams, you're such a visionary. You're so great. I go in there, I need a flare gun to get anyone's attention. I ran a state bill, and but the Salt Lake County need a pilot of like I think one person. No, it was a little bigger. But oh my gosh, you got to see the Obama people just gush over Ben McAdams.
That's why they're here.
I know.
That's why we're the Harvard.
Wasn't me. I didn't get them here. I did a little bit on this front, but they don't want to hear from me. It's all Ben.
Jim, your gripe. I think we got a little rivalry going here, but
no.
I
was going to kind of say my gripe is that I'm worried that as the speaker, Greg is not going to be able to support great programs like funding significant money. We kind of have a trial going on this preschool program because it's spectacular. So my gripe is if he changes away from that. So make a gripe out of it and make it mine.
Amen.
So I have to do that to make
my
it
your gripe. Will be the State of the State address coming next week. I'm going to throw out a challenge here for our dear governor to not make it be a speech about facts and rankings, but give us some aspirational goals that you want to align this state to lead behind. And with that, I will just say thank you for listening. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. We love both sides of the aisle. Keep on listening.